Welcome to Sprouts Radio from the Grassroots, a weekly program that showcases radio production by independent community media. We bring local stories to a national audience produced at a different location each week. I'm Mark Helpsmeet, your host for Spirit in Action, broadcast via WHYS LP in Eau Claire, Wisconsin. This is a Northern Spirit radio production, lifting up the work and lives aimed at healing the world through peace, justice, compassion, and care for creation. Today on Sprouts, we'll be sharing roughly half of an hour-long Spirit in Action interview with Tony Schultz, farm and labor solidarity activist in Wisconsin and a lead organizer of the March Tractorcade to the Capitol.
Let us sing this song for the healing of the world, that we may heal as one. With every voice, with every song, we will move this world along, and our lives will feel the echo of our healing.
With every voice. At the March Tractorcade at the Madison, Wisconsin mass protest, Tony Schultz spoke with fire, insight, and compassion, and that's how he caught my eye and ear. Tony is a third-generation farmer and a powerful voice for the combined interests of all working folks. He will join us in a moment from Stony Acre Farms, CSA, in central Wisconsin. But first, let's listen to him on March 12th on a windy day and at a massive demonstration in Madison, Wisconsin.
We know that we're all in this together. We go up together, or we go down together. The way I see it is we got two choices. I can have my unions busted and stand alone and be pitted against my neighbor in a desperate and unequal economy. Or we can come together to say, this is what our families need. This is what our communities need. This is what a just wage is. This is what democracy looks like.
Tony Schultz now joins us from Stony Acres Farm in Athens, Wisconsin. Tony, thanks so much for joining me for Spirit in Action.
Thanks for having me.
You are quite a spirit in action. I saw via YouTube the talk that you gave down in Madison back on the 12th of March. It was awesome. Were you a lead organizer in getting the tractors down there?
Yeah, actually, I was one of the people. We belong to a organization based out of the Twin Cities called the Land Stewardship Project, which deals with a number of issues regarding sustainable agriculture, basically. And it is more Minnesota-centric, but it has a lot of members in western Wisconsin. The membership director, Mike McMahon, called us up because he knew we had been active in different issues, fighting factory farms, promoting sustainable agriculture, community-supported agriculture. And he just wanted to get our sense of what was going on, what he thought the Land Stewardship Project could do. And as we were talking, I said, you know, we've got to have a show of solidarity. We've got to put the iconic image of the family farmer from Wisconsin. You know, when people around the country think of Wisconsin, I think they think of Little Red Barn still, even though this historical memory and identification is kind of being lost as the agricultural system changes. And so I said, well, I know that Joel Greeno was trying to get a permit to bring his tractor to a previous rally that the teachers union had organized, and he wanted to have his tractor there at that time. From that point, I called Family Farm Defenders, which is an organization that we are on the board of, based out of Madison, Wisconsin, but it's also a national group. And I said, John Peck, the executive director, let's have solidarity rally. Farmers supporting workers, farmers talking about why this budget hurts them as well. Let's get some tractors up on the square or cows or whatever. And he said, yep, Joel was actually working on getting the permit. So Joel Greeno does sort of tractor events 3 or 4 times a year where he does a hayride or parades or something like that. And so he was anxious to take his Alice Chalmers to the Capitol for this event for that reason, but also as a show of solidarity. So I said, let's get on it and we'll start organizing this. And so half an hour later, Kat posted on Facebook, Tractorcade, Farmer Labor Tractorcade, to be held at the Capitol Saturday at noon. And she just put that, we didn't have the permit yet, but she just posted it. And within 2 days, we had 4,000 RSVPs because word spreads fast with social media. It mushroomed from there, and the Tractorcade had over 50 tractors participating from with farmers all over the state. We had a good range of tractors, so from like a garden tractor all the way up to a 300-horsepower double-dual New Holland tractor. So it just tells you, like, it showed a good range, a good cross-section of some family farmers in the state of Wisconsin. And I felt that I was speaking in front of 100,000 people. By the time the senators came back, I think there was at least 200,000 people at the Capitol. You could not move around the streets. It was an incredible and inspirational moment. It's motivated a lot of great political action work in its wake. And so it was one of the most significant moments of my life.
You know, I played the clip from your speech at the beginning of this interview. Could you fill in for people what the connection is, why the farmers, the unions, why that's a strong bond? Because I think a lot of people, as you mentioned, really don't think about that today. I think that's been lost in the transition of our society. Why is it so important that the two stand together? Why is there a natural affinity, a common ground to be held?
Well, for me, there's two explanations or two answers to that question. One is the historical answer, and the other is fundamental reason of what we have in common. So first of all, I gave a little history lesson in that talk. The history lesson had to do with what is commonly known as the populist movement in the United States, which reached its peak in about 1890, 1896. If you think really hard back to your high school or college history courses, you remember Williams Jennings Bryan Cross of Gold speech or the farmers clamoring for free silver. But the populist movement was really the most progressive, broad movement that attempted an electoral shift in our country. And it had to do with farmers, who were the majority of the population at that time, and workers in the emerging industrial economy coming together to support things that benefited the common man. It's the common man versus the elite. And I like to focus that on the common man in an economic sense versus the elite, because there are all kinds of elitisms in our society that are exploited in the culture war. So, like, for instance, Bill O'Reilly talks about how educated liberals who drink lattes are elite, and working class people who drink coffee and eat donuts should resent those educated liberals. And so I think that the real bond of connection is between the common man, common person, economically, and against the economic elite. So those who dominate the economy, who dominate and control our politics through the corruption of their campaign contributions. Farmers, like workers, are working people that don't have a lot of power individually in the economy. But when they come together through a union, through collective action, they can exercise power that can transform the society, make it more broadly just, more egalitarian, and more accessible and representative of the common person's interest. And so farmers, even though we own farms and acreage, which workers may not, most farmers sell a commodity to a marketplace. And just like a worker who receives a wage that they don't determine, a farmer receives a price that's controlled by Wall Street or the Chicago Board of Trade or agribusiness corporations like Cargill or ConAgra or Dean Foods in the state. And so we're getting a price for our milk in this state that is, like, right now averaging about $15 per 100 pounds of milk. But it costs about $19 to produce that 100 pounds of milk. And it doesn't meet the cost of our production. And it's not because we don't work hard enough. It's because that price is controlled by those who dominate the economy. And so just like when workers have to give concessions, when workers don't receive a wage increase, even though there's been productivity gains in the last 30 years, we don't control the price. Workers don't control their wage. We need to come together, exercise some control over that, collectively withhold what is important to the economy, our labor or our product. And by collectively doing that, we gain power for the common person. That's the fundamental reason, the fundamental thing we have in common.
And those are powerful reasons, and they make great sense to me. You mentioned in there that you were talking about, you know, that Bill O'Reilly, when he talks about common person, he's not identifying the same common person you are. I think Bill O'Reilly thinks that the Tea Party is the common person, and certainly there are people who think of themselves as just Main Street USA who identify with the Tea Party or identify, have been down at the demonstrations in Madison trying to defend unions. Are they both equally the people of the United States?
Oh, every person is valuable. You know, every person has an intrinsic value that I respect. I think here's the difference between, like, what I consider the populist movement. Although the Tea Party has, like, this sort of facade of populism, this claim to populism, right? It calls itself a movement. But the Tea Party, the interests that they represent, work to conserve and enhance power for people who have power, for the dominant, the elite. And the populist movement, or progressive, or people who are on the left in this country, work to build and broaden power with people who've been excluded from power. So workers are excluded from power, they can't determine their wage. Farmers are excluded from power, they can't determine their price. Women are excluded from power. We live in a patriarchy. LGBT people are excluded from power. They can't get married to people who they love. These are all ways that people are excluded from power. The Tea Party, to me, when I see a working class person in the Tea Party, I'm disappointed, and I feel like the reason that the Tea Party gained a lot of traction is because that there is righteous anger out there. People are upset with how this economy is serving them. A lot of working class people are upset with how this economy is serving them, and so the Tea Party movement was formed. People participate in it for that. It was formed as a sort of an astroturf movement saying, we don't like Obama, and we don't like Obamacare, but people populated it because there's anger. I can think of some of my neighbors who have gone to Tea Party rallies. There is real anger that's motivating people, you know, common working folks to go to that. That needs to be addressed by those who are politicians or who run the economy. But their anger is being funneled, I think, to serve the interest of elites who dominate the economy, not serve the interest of working, middle-class people who create the wealth in this economy and who are, many of whom are currently out of a job. So I just feel like the Tea Party works against the interest, their position, political positions, work against the interest of working people. And it serves, you know, the Koch brothers who fund their rallies, or it serves those who dominate the economy. You know, the Tea Party is opposed to, so, like, President Obama wanting to tax the rich. Well, I don't think there's a more clear issue in our gambit of political issues that says you're with the wealthy or you're with the poor, working class, and progressive income tax, a progressive taxation. If you tax the rich, you are using that money to serve education, roads, whatever, you know, we feel we need to serve, not everything that I agree with, but you're taking from people who dominate and you're giving to the broad society, right? If you tax the poor, you're, you know, taking from the poor. And so I think that's very clear, but the Tea Party is opposed to that. And so if they're really for the common angry working person, then you would tax the rich. But the Tea Party is opposed to that because the agenda is controlled by those who dominate.
You're listening to Sprouts, Radio from the Grassroots, a weekly program bringing you local radio productions of national interest. I'm Mark Helpsmeet, and this is Spirit in Action, a Northern Spirit radio production originating from WHYS-LP, Eau Claire, Wisconsin. And we're visiting today with farmer activist Tony Schultz, one of the leaders of the March 12th Tractorcade to the Wisconsin Capitol. You mentioned, Tony, a number of issues which may or may not be the common issues of Wisconsin's family farmer. One of the accusations you said that Bill O'Reilly makes is about these latte-drinking liberals. I want to know, are you a latte-drinking liberal? Or are you just a third-generation farmer living in the central part of Wisconsin? Is there any discord between those two things?
There is. It's a cultural, so people who drink a latte that costs $3 at a coffee shop as opposed to 50 cents at the cafe, at the cafe in town, that's a symbol of elitism. Now, it's a meager thing, but a lot of people see every day, and so it engenders a little resentment. Then that resentment is amplified by right-wing voices who want to create wedges between working people. So if a teacher, right, for instance, in Athens, where I'm from, has a college degree and had someone expose them to drinking a latte in college, and they drink that in front of, a working-class person in Athens, then it's a little symbol of resentment, right, that a person can harbor. I think it's kind of petty. But if you want to know where I'm coming from, I was born raised on a 50-cow dairy farm, which is like that, is, I think, symbolized by the little red bond on our license plate. We didn't have political conversations growing up, essentially. I was apolitical. I thought I was going to be a basketball player, and I worked hard and baled hay and milked cows on the farm. But when I was a senior in high school, I came home from football practice, and my father told us that we were going to sell the cows. And I was decimated by this because I thought, oh, I was going to take on the farm and I'm going to be a farmer for the rest of my life. And this is what people do. Your grandfather starts a farm. He hands it to his father. He hands it to you. You're going to hand it to your son or daughter. This is how it is in Athens, Wisconsin. So I was decimated by that. I cried and begged. The decision had been made, not necessarily by him, because we were still getting up at 5:30 to do chores, working hard every day, and we had a good herd average and all of that, but the price wasn't there. The decision was made by the direction of the agricultural economy. And so selling our cows made me incredibly angry and politicized me. And because we didn't have cows, my mom said, go to college. And I went to UW Stout for 2 years and played basketball there. But then when I read things about the history and the economy and what was happening to agriculture, and I sought an answer to this, I became aware of how commodity markets are controlled and the trend in agriculture historically known as get bigger, get out, and factory farms versus family farms. And I transferred to Madison to get an education degree. And I continued to study the economy, and I formed a political critique based on that experience that has me identify. Now, you said I'm at latte drinking liberal. I don't identify as a liberal in the sense, but I do identify myself as on the left, someone who seeks to build and broaden power with people who have been excluded from power. So I see that I have been excluded from power, the power of having something of my own, a form of economic empowerment, independent space in an interdependent world, the family farm, has been taken from me, was taken from me, just like wages have been reduced to working people or jobs shipped out of the country to exploit someone who will work for less, or women who receive 70 cents on the dollar for doing the same job. So then I identify with all of those things. I view anyone struggling for equality, for justice, to build power when they are excluded from power. I identify with all those movements, the labor movement. These are workers struggling for a living wage to improve their lives, the women's movement, the feminist movement, women struggling for equal rights, the environmental movement, because we all live downstream and people who are working class are going to suffer most from environmental degradation, the civil rights movement, people of color, struggling for rights to not be treated as second-class citizens, the LGBT movement to not be treated as second-class citizens. I see all of that as the same thing. People working to build and broaden power with people who have been excluded from power historically. And so that's why I identify with it. I have educated myself about it, but I did not come from an educated background. I was politicized by what I feel like capitalism did to agriculture. That's where I gained my consciousness from, and that's how I identify today, and that's why I gave that speech.
I want to come back, Tony, to some of the stuff you were talking about earlier. One of the thoughts that was going through my head as you were speaking is how successfully, I guess, the rich people have pitted the poor people against the poor people, or the middle class against the middle class. Do you see that happening?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, there's a saying that's kind of paraphrased from history, but I think I heard it in a movie called The Gangs of New York, a Martin Scorsese film, but they have this scene in New York where the wealthy elite are talking about the immigrant class and how they see the immigrant class organizing for democracy and for recognition as citizens in this country that they come to, Irish immigrants. And the working class are playing this, like, on this rich man's mansion on a billiards table, and one of them says, "I can hire one half of the working class to kill the other half." You know, that's what when I hear Rush Limbaugh and I see my neighbors listening to Rush Limbaugh or to Glenn Beck, you know, these are people just like me, and they work for a living, they're small farmers, or my mailman, you know, I wonder why are you eating this up? But there is real anger, and people are disconnected from organization that represents their interests, and so this has filled a void as a means of expressing that real and legitimate anger, and it's been misdirected. And there's another quote that says, if you get them asking the wrong questions, it doesn't matter what the answers are. So I see that happening a lot. I see a major part of the right strategy, or the economic elite strategy, has been to use wedge issues in our society. And so views like abortion, for instance, and to say, working class people, you shouldn't vote with your union, you should vote for this, you should act in this way because they support abortion and you don't support abortion. And see, wedge issues are guns around here. And so they want to take your guns away. Well, working class people who don't have a lot of power around here, this is what I see in I don't sound arrogant, but this is my analysis. You're a working class person who doesn't have a lot of power, and you don't have a lot of connection to a source of organized power. Buying a gun and holding a gun is an incredibly powerful feeling. You know, this is a powerful and amazing tool, and to hold it and then have someone say, oh, they're going to take your guns away. Obama wants to take your guns away. And then that person votes for a party that says, we'll protect your guns, but we don't care if you have a job or not. We don't care if that job provides for your family. We don't care if it's a just wage that shares in the wealth that you create. Those questions aren't discussed or debated. That person has been wedged off from their fundamental economic interest. And I wish I could say something, it'd be vote or act in your economic interest. I think that's the political action to take. We're going to have the type of world that I want to live in, you know, just act in your economic interest. And when you do that and you follow through on that, you realize that we have an incredibly common interest to have control over our lives, to have a beautiful and constructive setting to raise a family, to be able to participate in our economies and democracies with real equality and freedom, to understand that we are interdependent, that one person's life is totally connected to another person, and even if it doesn't affect you directly, it affects you indirectly. And so I hope people can see through the wedge and just respect your neighbors and act on behalf of your neighbors and love thy neighbor as thyself, right? You know, I'm not religious, but that's the golden rule. And I wish people could adhere to that and not be stripped off. And it depresses me when I see these wedge issues have such an effect. Not that they're not issues, but they're issues that divide us, not allow us to recognize what we have so fundamentally in common.
Since you brought it up, let's talk about the area of religion. And one reason I bring this up, I'm almost finished with a book called American Grace, and it talks about how religion unites and divides us in this country. And those wedge issues got talked about in there, abortion and homosexuality, two primary ones. Religion did not divide the nation back 40 years ago. That is to say, liberals were religious and conservatives were religious, and the social gospel was still very active. Religion was doing a lot of good in the world and not being used as a tool to pit us against one another.
Definitely. I was raised Catholic, and I had no idea of this growing up, but my priest at St. Anthony's here in Athens, Father Gross, definitely had an understanding of liberation theology and the social gospel, like you said. And I remember going to extra sort of church events that he held for him on, like, what can we do about poverty? You know, as a child, my mom took me to some of them. And the Catholic position on wanting to end poverty and seeing poverty as a problem with our human condition.
That's important analysis that a lot of folks are missing. And I surely wish you well in spreading the word. And I thank you sincerely for joining me today, Tony. For those of you listening, you can hear the full one-hour interview with Tony Schultz at northernspiritradio.org, including further discussion of the history and structure of CSAs and the role of religion in this conflict. Again, that's at northernspiritradio.org. We'll take you out for today's Spirit in Action program with a portion of one of Pete Seeger's performances of Solidarity Forever.
Solidarity forever, solidarity forever, solidarity forever, for the union makes us strong.
When the union's inspiration through the workers' blood shall run, there can be no power greater anywhere beneath the sun. Yet what force on earth is weaker than the feeble strength of one? But the union makes us strong.
Solidarity forever, solidarity forever, solidarity forever, for the union makes us strong.
It is we who plowed the prairies, built the cities where they trade, dug the mines and built the workshops, endless miles of railroad laid. Now we stand outcast and starving mid the wonders we have made, but the union makes us strong.
Solidarity forever, solidarity forever, solidarity forever, for the union makes us strong.
That's it for Sprouts. You have been listening to a Spirit in Action interview with farmer activist Tony Schultz, a fiery, thoughtful voice for the interests and rights of the people. You can hear the full one-hour interview with Tony at northernspiritradio.org, including further discussion of the history and structure of CSAs and the role of religion in this conflict. Again, that's at northernspiritradio.org. Our theme music is Turning of the World, performed by Sarah Thompson, and you heard a bit from a Pete Seeger performance of Solidarity Forever. Sprouts is a weekly program produced in collaboration with community radio stations and independent producers across the country, bringing you local radio productions of national interest. The program is coordinated and distributed by Pacifica Radio. Thanks to Michael Yoshida at Satellite Operations. If you or someone at your station has a radio production that you wish to rebroadcast on Sprouts to showcase it nationally, contact our air traffic controller, Ursula Rudenberg, at ursula@pacifica.org. That's ursula@pacifica.org. I'm Mark Helpsmeet of Northern Spirit Radio in Eau Claire, Wisconsin. Thank you for listening, and see you next week on Sprouts.